Blog Talk Radio.
After years of character development forged in the refining fires of life, a talk show host emerges onto the stage unlike any other. Speaking with a voice of thunder, with wit and wisdom gushing forth like a sparkling spring in a dry, desolate land. His practical insight and resolve gives him a passport to the hearts and minds of an audience desperately seeking truth and integrity. Arriving on the scene just in time to save humanity, here he is, a vitamin pill with legs. This is the Tony Venuti Show. And here's your host, Tony Venuti!
Welcome to the Tony Venuti Show, the ex-conservative radio hour where this humble ex-con preaches virtue. Yes, our culture has come to that. I am your eyewitness account. I'm not going to judge for you what's been going on for the past 50 or 60 years, but who am I but just one of us, right? Who am I but just one of us? I am my audience. That which is attracted to you defines you, but no, I will assess, folks, for you like no other can. I will assess to you our culture having getting trampled upon by the pop culture, political correctness, all roads lead back to Marx. Yes, indeed, folks, I'm here every day of the week, and for the most part, the weekends too. But I'll typically play an archive, but because my schedule has been somewhat inconsistent, I've been live quite a bit on the weekends. I've had time on my hands because having left my entrepreneurship, having left my 20-year, 25-year-old pseudo-successful entrepreneurship, I don't know if you can call it successful just because I've hung on for 20 years. That's sort of what I did. But the bottom line is I'm out there looking for work now, man. And my time isn't necessarily my own. I got to get out there and be a performer, you know? This universe is a performance-driven lifestyle, don't you think? I mean, it is if you want to be a conservative. If you want to just be a liberal, go ahead. And if you want to be like a lot of yous that talk like you're conservative but act like you're liberal, you know what I'm telling you? How many times have I told you I have more respect for an axe murderer that admits to me up front that he's an axe murderer? At least I can get a bigger axe and get out of Dodge, but don't talk out of both sides of your mouth, folks, please. It's sexy. It's cool to be conservative. We don't whine. We take responsibility for our own actions. But at last, I am your weatherman. I am able to predict to you, as I can see things from the incrementalization of the events, of the cultural turns, the winds of war, the winds of change. Dramatic change, man. But it wasn't really that dramatic until the ninth inning. We were all having a good time during the first inning, in the second inning, through the 50s, in the 60s. Then things started to get a little hot and they calmed down. But with that came the change, subtle changes, changes that were made okay by the media, changes that were made and deemed okay by Hollywood. Changes that were made and deemed okay. Do you remember the last time? Well, let me ask you this. I'll find out just how old you are with this question. Do you all recall there was at one point in time where the military academy at Annapolis, and quite frankly, all the other military institutions before them, but Annapolis was the last one to fall. Do you remember that day, I believe it was in the early 70s, when the honor code, the code that says no one lies, no one cheats, no one steals, it's essentially, man, almost like the Ten Commandments, essentially, huh? But the code went deeper. It said, if you knew, but did nothing, of someone doing wrong, I don't care if it was your mama. I don't care if it was your dada. You're in the military now, boy. Yours isn't to question why. Yours is to do or die. That honor code that said, if you even are the least bit aware, you're duty bound. Duty bound. I saw the incrementalization of that happening. I saw a big flip in the turn there. Hey, Alan, nice to see you. Welcome to the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour. I'm going to talk about our little Humvee. Humvee! Alan threw on my Facebook page. And we're going to be talking about, I've got a lot of Facebook strings going on. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be talking about Robin Grace is talking about with Alicia Campbell about. And I'm going to be talking about Andrew James making a remark on my notion of black African-American friends, why haven't they come out against the Black Panther Party as the whites came out with Martin Luther King and against the KKK, etc.? So I'm going to be sharing some of those things right now. but I'm telling you, see, do you remember the military institution in the Code of Justice? I mean, not the Code of Justice, I guess it was the Code of Justice, but it was the Honor Code, right? It was the honor code that if somebody didn't saw a wrongdoing and didn't report it, they were just as guilty. See, that's how sacrosanct the truth is. That's how sacrosanct honor is. This is something that I, as growing up as a child, always saw the court systems and government behave like or believe in like. But that isn't holding true. It's not holding up to water anymore. What is it? It's the culture, stupid. It's the lack of virtue. It's our morality. Gosh, man, we're afraid to talk about it. I got this group going called Liberals Equals Baby Killers. Yes, because my attitude is, yes, let's use a little Alinsky on the Liberals, you know. Let's use just a little bit of Alinsky on the Liberals. Let's throw it back in their face, the isolate it, segregate it, and nail them with it, put it against, you know, think about it. You know, they want to call choice. They want to call something as basic as killing a baby choice. It's their choice to kill a baby. Is it pro-choice or killing a baby? You know, I could see me now, somebody should make a poster. With a bloody fetus, I'm sorry if it's too descriptive. I'm sorry, Ma, I know you're in my ear. A bloody fetus with a caption that says, some say this is a choice. Others say it's a fetus. Words, just words. So anyway, I wanted to say to the fact that when you're fighting evil, never play by any kinds of rules or ethics in terms of combat. I mean, this Western civilization, when us mean people went into combat, we actually had some rules of war, so to speak, that we were honor-bound to fall within. But the Liberals have no idea, and of course, the Liberals are just an extension of evil, so that just goes to show you. But Holly Hamilton came in. Now, remember, this room is called Liberals Equals Baby Killers. And then, yes, question mark, do you agree with me that liberals are baby killers? Howie says, respectfully, should this group have a different name? Although I believe in the precepts of its existence with much prejudice and the righteous anger that we all should have regarding the many unborn who have been murdered, do the inflammatory overtones of the name serve to repel many who otherwise might listen and agree? And see, my response is essentially, here's the nice thing about Facebook. You don't have to be in a group if you don't like it. But I didn't even go there with Howie. No, I was above that. I basically said, no, my whole purpose is to fight fire with fire. Actually, I said something like, fire with fire. Jesus is, because, you know what, we were talking about, uh, It's inflammatory. There's no question about it. So does the Lord of Lords have fire in his eyes? Still, is it a valid question? But we are called to do, draw the lost away from the fire or point at them as they walk into it, was what Howie was stating to me. And I said back to him, I said, fire with fire, baby. Jesus is the Omega in this thought. There is the Alpha to be considered, that which is the protector, not the nurturer. And then I made a little statement that I might be over my head with that very primal, instinctive, intuitive response to that question, where I'm using the Omega as the feminine side of all life. Everything has the Alpha and the Omega, the male and the feminine, and I believe that I'm using that correctly. I'm not sure if I'm using that. But he does come back and say, good, true words, good intent, without question, Tony, but are we driving the swine into the fire then? Is that the purpose? Because that is not the intent of that parable. Well, I don't know if I was referring to that parable as literate. But I do see it in my own humbled assessment of you literally have to take it to the enemy. And if it means being as low as they are, as low with you, then yes, I really do believe that's exactly what you have to do. That's exactly what you have to do. We've got some birthdays out there. We've got some birthdays out there in Facebook land. Happy birthday, Bob Bark. Happy birthday, Bobby Jones and Elizabeth Vaughn. Happy birthday. And Hugh Gagner. And Mark Phillips, happy birthday. And Susan Battelle, happy birthday. And Todd McLaren, happy birthday. My Facebook friends, Facebook giving new meaning to the word friends. But I'll tell you what, it's really pretty neat having this kind of dialogue at the markets, at the center square, right? Like they do in Athens and Greece in the old days, you know, where you could talk politics. When did it ever come in the civilized world, in the modern world, I should say, in the modern days of civilization, where it was almost imperative to say don't talk politics or religion? Or was that something I'm sort of losing in my DNA that just resembled the kitchen, you know, when you're having family over, don't talk politics or religion? It takes true adults to have a conversation talking politics and religion, because doesn't it always come down to emotion and personal ID? My gosh, man. Anyway, folks, you're listening to Tony Venuti rant and rave here. And I've got some things that have been coming up that's really deteriorating the culture that we need to talk about. You know, we need to understand liberalism. We need to understand that liberalism is the cause of all that we're trying to make right by being liberal. Isn't that wild? Do you really believe that the cause of equality in whites and blacks, that the equality of male and female species is the issue, or is it a wedge to drive between that which is good amongst their own selves? Divide and conquer, isn't it? Isn't that what's happening? Feminism has always been a joke to me. I always wondered what it'd be like to be a gal. Never have to pay for anything. I always be the one that would, because I'm a girl, it's not my fault. You're a man. You're in charge. And all you had to do was defer to the man. Feminism, there's almost a certain contempt for men in feminism by definition. And that had to start someplace. That contempt for things had to start. You had to have the kind of personality that would have a contempt. This is Tony Venuti, and I'm looking at Mop Lover, Bopar Lover. What's your name, man?
Hey, Tony, this is Alan. What's up, brother?
Nice to see you, Alan. It's been a long time. You've been keeping busy?
I have. And you?
Oh, well, you know, I'm still looking for work. As a matter of fact, I just came from a job interview today selling those orthopedic footwear that like, you know, it's these little orthopedic things that you put underneath your feet because I guess a lot of people have trouble with their feet, huh?
Oh, yeah. The foot is the root of all of our problems.
Wait a minute. So you mean politically speaking?
Have you ever noticed that how your feet feel is how you feel?
Yes,
if your feet are cold, you're cold. If your feet are sore,
okay,
you're sore. Hey, I'll have to
work on that one.
I met a little South Korean girl many, many years ago while I was in the Navy, and she told me that the feet are the root of how you feel. And she massaged my feet. She cracked my toes. She cracked my tarsals and my metatarsals. And I tell you what, that was the best I've ever felt in my entire life.
You know, I give Cam a hellified foot massage probably about 3 or 4 times a week.
She deserves
it. About, you know, about 30, 40-minute massage, and I'm good. And, you know, this reflexology thing, all of those Eastern medicines, I think those people in the Far East really had it together on a lot of thinking, right? Medicine and all kinds of
acupuncture, acupressure, all that stuff. I mean, that's documented science. You can't argue with it.
Right.
It's like, you know, how far away from the Earth is the sun? 93 million miles. You can't argue with it. You can't measure it, but you can't argue it either.
Right.
And that's what's going on in today's political world. Everybody's arguing about facts. They're distorting them.
Right.
And that's why I called in, because I saw this particular topic, and I was like, oh, yeah.
And Alan, isn't that really what it comes down to? It's who's got the bigger bullhorn?
It not only is it who's got the bigger bullhorn, but it's who's preaching to the stupidest audience.
Yeah.
Why do you think Obama's talking at colleges?
Exactly.
He's not talking at, you know, successful businesses. He's not giving his speeches to kindergartners. He's talking at colleges because he knows.
What would be the best question for people to, just by answering it, get that whole point? Why do we I think about that all the time, too. If you think about logic and sensibility, if anybody is bragging about, like, say, for instance, Ron Paul, so many of his followers and sycophants are young. If you think about people who are doing the wrong thing, who are they trying to align themselves with but the young? Doesn't young and stupid have a correlation, or at least young and ignorant? Let's just say young and ignorant, not necessarily young and stupid. But isn't it easier to fool young and ignorant? And can't that argument be made? And how come we never hear that kind of discussion?
Well, exactly. Where do you think the saying ignorance is bliss comes from? I mean, you talk to somebody about taxes who has never paid taxes, and they're going to say, hey, that's no problem. But you talk to somebody, you know, who runs a business about taxes, and they're going to say, hey, it's a big problem. It depends on how you define your audience. And the problem is our president is speaking to the stupidest among us. And unfortunately, over the years, they are becoming the majority. You remember the movie Idiocracy? Hello?
Yeah. Boy, that's a great movie. You know, I never saw that until just recently.
I know.
Yeah.
And I don't credit Mike Judge with the creation of Beavis and Butthead, because I just think that was stupid. But we all know that according to natural law, opposites must exist. Without stupid, where is brilliant?
Exactly.
Yeah, and see, that's where liberalism screws everything up.
Unfortunately,
they always want to make us perfect, always the same, always equal, and you can't. You've got to have losers. You've got to have losers.
Exactly. You have to have poverty in order to have wealth. You can't eliminate poverty without eliminating wealth, and that's what Barack Obama is trying to do, is trying to eliminate wealth in order to eliminate poverty.
Now let me throw something at you. Do you believe, as I do, that in terms of legitimate discussion, the idea of using polls, see, I think polls are perverse because we're a representative government, and polls suggest popularity.
Yes, polls are perverse because I heard Bill O'Reilly the other night say that 63% of Americans, blah, 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 because of a poll that showed 63% of 1,073 people surveyed. Now, we don't know who those people surveyed were. Why would you say that 330 million people base their entire opinion on what 1,073 people said?
But see, my point is it shouldn't even be on that. It shouldn't even be on anybody's opinion.
Exactly.
Because that isn't how we elect our leaders. We elect our leaders to make the tough decision. We don't elect our leaders to go to the head of the crowd and say, gang, we're about to get killed. What should we all do? I don't want to make the hard decision. Of course, that's what they do in the White House now by making anything go to Congress. That's what Obama has done. By always relinquishing responsibility directly to Congress, because he can triangulate the fact is, hey, I wasn't the one that made the decision. And that's
Tony, you're misunderstanding my bro. He hasn't relinquished responsibility to Congress. He's relinquished the blame.
No, correct. There you go. No, I stand corrected. No, he's in
and
charge.
Now he's blaming
he's
the...
We know he knows what's going on.
Exactly, and now he's blaming the Supreme Court for Obamacare, and they haven't even issued a ruling yet.
Yeah, he stepped in doo-doo big time there.
He stepped in
doo-doo over his head.
He is taking out the other two branches of government in order to make the executive branch the most powerful.
Do you think he overstepped his bounds? In terms of getting away with it is what I mean. We know he overstepped his boundaries. But in terms of him thinking he can get away with it, because in terms of his own mind, he knows what he's doing. He knows he's usurping the Supreme Court's power.
Yes, he knows. I have said that all along. He is not in over his head. He is not clueless. He knows exactly what he is doing.
Now, but my question is, do you think he miscalculated?
No, not at all.
Well, don't you think he's counting?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
He is counting on the sheeple to stay home. He is counting on the Ron Paul idiots to stay home because Ron Paul is not going to be the nominee.
Let me ask you this: Do you think that he will succeed in his assumptions with the Supreme Court?
Yes. If he cannot win the election, he is going to steal it.
Oh, no, I believe that, too. No, he will not relinquish office. He will, no, I've been saying that all along, Alan. If he's not able to rig the vote or whatever it takes to win the vote,
George Soros owns the voting machines.
Yeah,
and
not.
the counting company is just outsourced to a company in Spain. So, I mean, you take that for what it is.
Okay, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Because I've been projecting out for many years that if it got to be pushed to shove, how would a retaliation of the public at large manifest itself and what it would look like? Would it be peaceful? Would it be somewhat peaceful, but obviously risk of violence? Would it be out-and-out violence? So I've been asking myself this question, I bet you, Alan, for 10 or 20 years, because I could see it coming, that at some point, someone's going to try to take absolute control beyond checks and balances of the law, which is what's happening now, correct?
Exactly. That's
right,
what the, that's what the Trayvon Martin... That's what the Trayvon Martin thing is all about. That's what the executive order regarding the DREAM Act is all about.
Look at Fast and Furious, okay, where they're doing absolutely nothing.
Of course not. We're arming the enemy.
Right. So I've got a question. How? I mean, what would people do without going up in arms if they were peaceful? I'm still waiting for tens of thousands people show up at the White House one day. I'm still looking for major corporations throughout the country where there's a work stoppage, you know, not a union work stoppage, but a people work stoppage. And as it gets closer to what I've always thought should have happened, but hasn't happened, I'm thinking, hey, we ain't going to see anything. How would it manifest itself? Have you thought through that at all?
Oh, yeah, I have. It's going to manifest
itself. What kind of
things? It's going to manifest itself as natural disasters, earthquakes, forest fires, union disagreements. I mean, the Scott Walker thing in Wisconsin, that's like the tip of the iceberg.
That was a preview.
Exactly.
You know, that's like highlights coming up 2 and 6 for the full news, you know?
I mean, the union guys, they can stop the stuff at the pier. I mean, before it even gets here.
Right.
Now, it's pretty funny. You remember Donna Devane, right? Empowered Women?
Yeah.
I was on her show the other day about the 9/11. I mean, she's a 9/11 truther. She thinks
right.
that there's a whole bunch more underneath there, and to a certain degree, I can understand that. I can agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think that what we saw play out on national TV was what actually happened. I mean, I was debating about the missile hitting the Pentagon. It's like, well, what about the 384 people who were, you know, stuck in traffic on the beltway there who saw an airplane come in?
I'm a pretty creative guy. And I can't for the life of me imagine the level of conspiracy. You know how hard it is to keep the secret for two people?
Well, I mean, what is the hardest thing to keep? A secret. one of the two people who has a secret wants to brag about it. The other one wants to keep it hidden.
Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think of the fact, have you seen any Hispanic people or Latinos chime in on this Reverend Sharpton and Reverend Jackson? Nobody's come to this guy Zimmerman at all, huh?
I have not seen that yet. I was digging into Marco Rubio's Twitter feed and his website to see what he had to say about it. Nothing yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about crickets chirping.
Yep. I got this guy, Sal Giannotti. He says, Tony, I'd like to add what Latinos think about the term white Latinos. It's to incite black-on-white hate on white-skinned Latinos. And that was my whole point of the post. I said, what do Latinos think of Reverend Sharpton and Reverend Jackson? To me, it's race-baiting all day long. And they came up with that and said, come on, man.
They probably think the same thing we do, a bunch of bozos who don't care about us.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they don't want equality. If there was true equality, then they wouldn't make money. They wouldn't get paid.
No, exactly.
It is in their best interest to keep the inequality alive, to go ahead and spread it, to fan the flames. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, I got Christopher Bolton Sr. here saying, I used to date a black girl and got acquainted pretty good with her family. And what amazed how they were, well, they were very light-skinned, but what amazed them was they would talk about dark-skinned blacks. He said, man, talk about race and within the race. It was very bad. So we know that, too. I've seen many inner racist dark-skinned blacks and light-skinned blacks.
Where are you seeing that? In the chat room? I'm not seeing anything.
On one of the groups, of Restoring America Together.
Ah, okay, okay.
Yeah, I'm reading from a string here.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I learned my first lesson in racism when I brought home a black girl and introduced them to mom and dad. Now, I mean, dad's from Alabama, mom's from South Carolina.
And, a little bit embarrassing, huh?
Well, more for them than anything else. I mean, my mom, she like gasped very deeply and said, son, she's black. And I'm like, mom, where did you come by this information? Who told you?
Yeah. alert.
That was one of the things about being an Air Force brat growing up overseas. I was never exposed to it. So, you know, I find a good-looking girl, it doesn't matter the color of her skin.
What's color got to do with it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and in the 50s, I remember the first time we had a few friends that were black, and my mother said to me, are you sure you want to have them as friends? Because you won't be able to invite them to parties. And I said, why not, Mom? Well, you know, they would be more uncomfortable than even we. I said, Ma, that's old fashioned. We don't take like that. You know? And it was like a revelation to her, but it was, hey, this is all truth. And that was then, this is now. And now it's gone from a, well, I, you know, it's been by design. The idea of the division between the races is no accident, is it? Alan?
Well, did you see?
I'll be right back with you, Alan. This is Tony Vinity, folks, with your ex-conservative radio from Tucson, Arizona. And it's the Culture Stupid bringing you the music that brought in liberalism as sexy, that sort of counted the idea of a soft landing, bringing you into a smooth landing of all roads back lead to Marxism. You better believe it. man. Liberalism is cool. It's what's going on. Gosh, the lack of self-esteem. Self-esteem learned from a parental sacrifice because they're not too busy keeping up with the Joneses and they're not buying into the fact that your duty is to give your children a better life than the ones before them. Ah, but that's a tough love parent. That's a tough love parent. So many of those spoiled kids, those trust fund babies, oh, those ones that came up with contempt. Hey, Alan, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Got a question. Do you think, I've been saying, so you're a good test, because I like your mind, I like the way you think, so you're a good tester for my thoughts. I see a root component needed to, you know, people are always saying, how do these, you know, Kool-Aid drinkers, you give them one and one is two, and they look at you and they got this belief system, cult-like responses, reactions, and how can that be? Why are they like that? And I think it's because it started out with the idea that they had contempt. They had contempt for their parents, and they were able to transfer that contempt onto authority. And I think that's what evil picks up on. That's what progressives are able to pick up on. That's what liberals are able to pick up on, to be able to seed the thoughts that, you know, what's your parents? And I mean, this is all a part and part of the Communist Manifesto, is break down the family, the religion, and for that you need contempt, don't you?
Exactly. And I mean, what's the first thing that kids do when parents say no? They rebel.
Right.
I mean, it's human nature, okay? The younger knows better than the older. And it isn't until we're much older that we realize, hey, our elder was right. I tell my dad that all the time. It's like, man, I never realized how smart you were until I got old.
it's absolutely uncanny.
It is the culmination of technology and experience that doesn't make up for knowledge. I mean, if you think about it, knowledge is knowing that a tomato is fruit. Okay?
Right.
Wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad.
Right.
And that's what it all boils down to. I mean, we think we're smart, but we don't have knowledge. We think
Correct.
We're smart because we're in school and our parents aren't.
And you know, that's My whole thing about wisdom is knowledge plus experience.
Exactly. Experience
is
the 10x factor there. Knowledge is 1x, experience is 10x.
Right.
I mean, you can read about IRS audits all you want, but until you've gone through one, you don't really know how bad it is. And I can speak to that. Trust me.
Yeah, no, and those are great articulations of that point. I don't know.
Well, Tony, I spend my days teaching 60-year-olds how to work computers. I've got to break it down into the smallest common denominator, you know, what everybody can understand. Okay, yes, your hard disk drive is the Walmart. Your DVD drive is the convenience store, okay? Your hard disk drive has everything. The DVD only has what you want it to have.
Right.
And that, I guess that's been one of my innate skills all along, being a trainer in the Navy, was breaking things down into the lowest common denominator for understanding. I mean, I was teaching people who grew up on typewriters how computers worked.
Yeah, and that's the kind of knack, that's the kind of personality trait as a teacher, as a trainer, that you can't necessarily teach. You know,
exactly.
That's a manner.
It is the joy of watching that light bulb turn on that makes you want to do it.
That's it. Hey, Alan, I'll come back, but I got to take a break and do a few things, and I might throw on a short archive for a bit. But you're listening to Tony Venuti, folks, with the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour. And, Alan, thank you, baby. Love talking to you.
Hey, back at you, brother. We'll talk at you later, and I'll be in the chat room.
All right, man. Talk to you. This is
take
Tony
care,
Venuti,
man.
Folks, with you.
Best wishes to Pam.
Ex-Conservative Radio. I will. Bye-bye now, Alan. And that was Alan Lewis. And Ramblings by Russ. Put up a link there, Alex. Okay, I'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. This is Tony Venuti with your Ex-Conservative Radio Hour. coming to you from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the Culture Stupid playing you the music from the 60s that brought in liberalism as sexy, that made misbehavior and malfeasance of all walks of life sexy, because we all know it's cool to get away with stuff, huh? We're so mature, aren't we? Folks, I got to tell you, I've got one major mistake in life. I thought we'd all grow up. Hey, Kari, nice to see you. Welcome to the ex-conservative radio. Or I'm not sure if you're familiar with my show, but this ex-con here, we speak virtue. You got it? Hey, and Alan in the room with you, he's a pretty good soul, man. Friend him on Facebook, and you can friend me, too, at tonyvenuti.com/tony.venuti. Yes. We've got all kinds of things happening here, the least of which is the incrementalization of evil swiping up virtue at every step of the way, and it's only been recently that, well, the fox in the hen house sort of came out, poked out their heads and said, okay, already, we're here, we don't have to fool you anymore. Yes, we are the fox, and yes, we're in the hen house. Hello, how you doing? Exposing themselves, the media. Don't you think the media's been part and parcel to this whole thing? Do you think we could be anywhere where we are right now if it wasn't for the media? Do you realize that Joe McCarthy in 1950 was dead on right? Whoa! You got the, what, C.S. Lewis, what's this guy's name? The John Birch Society, you know, the John Birch Society. I remember going to Phoenix, seeing billboards, take us out of the U.N. You know, take us as in USA out of the UN. And I remember thinking just in my DNA that I thought these guys were a bunch of loons. Hey, and that was only as recently as 10 years ago. I'm 61 years old, man. We have been fed such a bunch of lies over the past 50 years, folks, that it's in our DNA now to go along with the crowd. It's in our DNA to go along with the crowd because we simply, through the power of suggestion, and with the help of many a celebrity to who we all are emotionally in tune to, we've been trained to think emotionally. We've been trained to accept our feelings as just. We've also been trained to be in the moment. Be in the moment because we all know living for today is much too long. Boy, I thought that was a hell-bent concept back in the 60s. Live for today. What a concept, but that was an irresponsible concept. Alan's saying sheeple all day long. Just tell them how to not be accountable. Give people permission to resort to the lowest common denominator, and you'll just see them take a little slide as if they were going down the escalator and they wanted to put their butt on their railing, okay? But, of course, like most of us who may have tried that once or twice, we're always at risk of tumbling over. Be careful what you ask for. You just might experience the freedom of another day's mistakes. Oh, I know. We don't want to listen to anybody that knows better than us because we know everything. All right. Let me see who amongst our friends in Facebook. Janice Berger Patterson says a Florida advocacy group spearheading protests over the radically charged Trayvon Martin shooting has welcomed the intervention of the United Nations Human Rights Chief, who has called for the shooter to be put on trial and reparations for the victims concerned. Now, really, can you buy that? Can you? Is that outrageous or what? Oh, give me a break. A Florida U.S. High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, commented on the Martin shooting during a visit to Barbados on Thursday. Justice must be done for the victims, she told media briefing in Hastings on the southern end of the Caribbean island. The law should operate equally in all respects to violations. So every other situation such as this will be urging an investigation and prosecution and trial and, of course, reparations for the victims concerned. Last I've seen, we're a sovereign nation. Okay. Who died and left them boss? Now, here's what I do know. That I think we're close to not being sovereign anymore. Not being sovereign anymore. Wasn't it Obama last year? Wasn't it in France that he signed some kind of pact that if it wasn't the... It was certainly the start of giving away our sovereignty because it agreed to do many things, the least of which was, I think, didn't we also give up our rights to declare war without having to go to a council with the UN first? I forgot what it is, but we're having our sovereignty chipped away at, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Tom Cementina says, I have no use for the UN. As far as I'm concerned, every member you need to be deported, sent packing, and told, step foot in America again, you'll be thrown in prison. Every member, that's what he meant. Every member needs to be deported, sent packing, and told, if you step foot in this country again, yeah, I don't get it. I've never gotten all that, the power that the UN had, diplomatic immunity. Wow. All right, what else we got here? Alan West. I've heard 80 House Democrats are communists, and Obama is too scared to debate me. No, it's a good question, he said, adding, I believe there's about 78 to 81 members of the Democratic Party that are members of the Communist Party. That's a fact. That's a true fact. All you have to do is Google that, right? All you have to do is Google it. It's right there front and center. It's right there front and center. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, isn't the Democratic Party essentially the Communist Party? You know, if it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck, you might want to call it a pig. You might want to put some lipstick on it. But it's still a duck. Communism, called Democrat, doesn't make a Democrat when they're behaving in the manner that says, no, 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 you're not the boss of you, and the world does owe you a living, and when you collect that the world owes you because you've collected from not having performed yet, the deal you just made with the devil, my friend, is that the world now owns you a living. Think about that. Somebody owes me something for something I haven't done to deserve it yet. Isn't that the real question? Somebody owes me something for which I've done nothing to be owed yet. How does that square? To me, that's more like a loan. Okay, hey, you're a startup. You've just entered into this world. You have no mommy. You have no daddy. You have no family, you have no church, you have no charity, but we broke it all down little bit by little bit by little bit. So that there but for the grace of the state of I, there but for the grace of the state of I, who will deem you a loan, you see, a loan. We'll put you into a trick bag so tight that you'll be paying back to which that which you believe is deserved. The world owes you a living. And what did you do to earn it? You didn't earn nothing. You're taking up space in the world. Let me tell you something. The world might give you a loan. The world might give you a loan, and then when it does, it owns you. So you can either go by the world owes you a living or the world's going to own you a living. Alan says, the government's big enough to give you everything. It's also big enough to take everything. Hey, KJ, nice to see you. Say hello to Alan. We're tight folk here. We're tight folk here on the ex-conservative radio. We're from Tucson, Arizona. We're each and every day. It's the culture, stupid. And I got a bunch of shout-out to my Facebook pals out there. You know, Facebook to giving new meaning to the word friends. But it's a great, I'll tell you, I actually love it. It's great for what I'm doing. You know, to me, political activism? How activism is what I'm doing? How active am I in the word of activism? Am I really even there? Am I even really there now, activism? Or am I just spewing a lot of hot air? There's a few more out there listening to it so that it has a net effect of zero. But if I could just reach one person, if I could just reach one person, I remember my teachers saying that. I remember stories in the TV of people saying that. I also remember when I was growing up that as people got older, I thought they'd be a grown-up. But just because you're grown up didn't mean you grew up. That's another thing. I'm so always getting disappointed. I'm forever getting disappointed in what one can expect. So I've since learned. Blessed art thou who expect nothing, for I shan't disappoint them. Perhaps this is our destiny, for ignorance truly is bliss. What, you don't want to be blissful? You don't want to be happy? Why don't you just come on, close your eyes to all of this? Don't listen to me one bit. I'm telling you, we've had it up to here in garbage. And now we're waking up and people say, oh, how did this happen? Oh, well, you know, the last 8 years of Bush. The last 8 years, nothing. Do not. I mean, I'm talking about the lack of intelligence here, or am I talking about just ignorance? Or am I talking about a combination of both? I understand if you don't have the information, but we have had a long time to get some of this information into our heads. Do we really just want to go to NFL football games every Sunday? Big minds talking about ideas, average minds talking about events, keeping us a little bit distracted. In small minds, of course, talking about people, like the sheeple talking about people, breaking everything down to its lowest common denominator. Liberals being the immature children of the universe that they are, and yet they're empowered by what? They're adults now, and they're collectified. They're unionized, group tanked, think-like-sized. Well, that's a great new word, Tony. And just let that free stream of consciousness come out. Amen. Enter into the ex-conservative or at your own risk. You might hear something you like. You might hear a few things that you say, wait, you might hear something that even I don't want to hear, but because it came out of my mouth, I'm not going to apologize for it, because what's the point? Alan saying, the government can't take what isn't given. John Galt. Yeah, so like raping the willing. You know, you can't rape the willing either. I think that's sort of like what the government's doing now. It's raping the willing. Or is it raping the unwilling, willingly? Is it raping the willing, or is it raping the unwilling? Willing being that we don't have the cojones to stand up. Willie is that we don't have the cojones to risk our status. I call it status anxiety that we all worry about. What will my friends say? What will my family think? Will this risk my job? Will this risk my status? Ridicule. We've been allowed to live our life behind the power of the minority, behind the magnification that the media creates perception of reality without ever any one of us learning that perception is simply an illusion of reality. But enough of us don't know that. Enough of us don't know that. So what we have is the few being magnified to make the many of us believe that we're the few, because we never see any of us out there. That silent majority. Wasn't that Agnew and Nixon that first said that in the 70s? The silent majority. Hey, I always knew that existed. Because you see, the populace, the media, they would only focus on urban cities, wouldn't they? Urban cities. We want to own all the national lands, don't we? We want to own all the lands in the state, federal deed, don't we? We want to make them all into federal parks, don't we? Do you know, I believe there's over 40 or 50% of Arizona's owned by the federal government. So if we if we unite the power base of liberalism and evil and all of that into these cities, where we take the black and white thing and we empower blacks who wish to, behind the idea of being a victim, behind the idea that we owe them, behind the ludicrous thought that this generation is beholden to this generation of blacks for the errors and omissions of our granddaddies 15 generations ago. This premise is so perverse, it's ridiculous. Imagine this. Imagine trying to pay back people who are never going to feel any remuneration from it. Imagine being responsible for paying back something that you had nothing directly to do with, and the people getting paid back had nothing directly to experience in which the pain that was the purpose of the whole treaty was about. It's absurd. And yet, it's that terrible, it's that dynamic, it's that paradigm that's been existing, that we, people of success, you all Anglos out there, you Caucasians, man, you white people, I'm Italian, thank you very much. And yes, I'm also a racist, but that's natural, I'm not a bigot. But I am a racist because, see, that's the other trick bag they put us in by having that false premise that racism isn't real or isn't just. Racism is simply just. It's just what it is. It means, hey, man, there's only two kinds of people in this world, Italian and those that want to be Italian. Well, of course I'm going to say that because I'm Italian. Oh, I'm racist. Yeah, hello. Now, does that make me a bigot? Not necessarily. Not unless I simply dislike you or think you're less, simply because of the fact that you're different. Regardless of the fact that you have to understand, we're probably going to be more comfortable with people that are like us than with people who aren't like us. It's just reasonable. And when you're in Rome, you do as Romans do. So if you come into Rome, and if you want to not bring your culture along with you, and you want to adapt or not adapt, but no, instead, you see, what we have here is mutual Americans of America who all seem to think now, through the generations, that we stole the country from the Indians. Uh-huh. That we just up and took something that didn't belong to us. Shame those white men. Slap, 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 slap them down. And not only that, but they made it much worse. They made it so bad that they went on to enslave all those blacks so that this country could be the exceptional, wonderful, great country, so that when we are successful and when we create means, when we create patents, when we create industries, it's okay to give it to the rest of the world because we didn't know it to begin with. I got it. The one world order, mutual Americans of the world unite. These mutual Americans of the world see the world as the oyster, not the United States. They see the world as their oyster, and they are the biggest parasite upon the one greatest nation, the one most perfect union that took over 5,000 years of trial and error, folks. 5,000 years. We didn't get this way by accident, you know. We didn't get this way by accident. You know, liberals think that equality is the highest good. Equality is the end goal of all or most liberal policy. The conservative might ask himself, why is this idea of becoming valued over all others? Equality is certainly good, but as the highest end and goal, it can lead to devastating consequences. Folks, you can't have a two-headed coin. If you have a heads, there's going to likely be a tails. Conservatives argue that the greatest instructor on what I consider natural laws myself that exists in a civil society is human experience. Is human experience and truth. Human experience and knowledge, which is truth. Without truth, there is no knowledge. You can give me facts, you can give me an education, but if you're not telling me the truth, the only thing you did was had me believe something that wasn't true. that isn't is doesn't make me smart. You can program a robot to do anything, can't you? Well, if you can train a robot to do anything, you can train a human being just as easy as if they are a robot. Let's take those of us that created a need, that provided a service to complete a need, that provided a product of diligent work, of trial and error, that provided to a civilization things from which simply grew one little incrementalization at a time, and it got better and better. Let's take out the moral imperative, the moral order of a society. Let's just take it out so that we can reshape the world into a utopia where you should never have to worry about anything, because equality is its highest good, its highest order. Folks, you've been listening to Tony Rant and Rave. I do this every day. I don't know if I'm going to be continuing very long. I might not have gotten a real job. I may be getting a real job. I hope so. I need to very, very badly. I've been taking pictures around for these real estate-owned properties that the banks own after they acquire them from bankruptcies or foreclosures. And once they go to auction, if they're not sold at auction, and the bank ends up hanging on to them, what they do is they hook up with these realtors, and these properties are called REO properties, real estate owned properties. So I've been going around and just not much at all. I've been barely putting gas in the car and my car payment, those two things. So I've been looking for a job, but I can't find one. Man, nobody will hire me. I can't pass a criminal background check. And I believe there's an age problem, but I'm not really worried about that. But the bottom line is nobody's hired me yet. And I'm just happy that my life of 25 years has a good paying job. She's not ready to kick me out of the house yet, but I won't be surprised any day now. Not really, but, you know, still, I'm not happy about it. What do we got here? Let's see what we got over Facebook. I've been telling you folks that I've been giving some shout-outs to my Facebook friends. Bob Bark, happy birthday. Bobby Jones, happy birthday. Elizabeth Vaughn, happy birthday. Hugh Gagner, Mark Phillips, Susan Peterson, happy birthday. Todd, happy birthday. My friends on Facebook, giving new meaning to the word friends. Now, you know this business about Roman Rosen, this gal talking about Hillary Rosen talking about Ann Romney, about the idea that what does she know? What does Ann Romney know, a stay-at-home mom? I came up with a good thought this morning after seeing the news. I think they bit themselves a little bit too much more than they can chew with that one, okay, because this is going to come back to bite them big time. But I came across a good analogy between nonprofit groups and working moms, okay? And you have to remember, this gal Rosen was talking down on the idea of working moms. And it's tell me if this isn't so counterintuitive to feminism. Shouldn't feminism, if they were really wanting to empower the woman, wouldn't they really see this again? The Communist Manifesto with the breakdown of families. Here's this gal. This gal's a lesbian. Her and her girlfriend adopted two boys, or twins. I'm not sure if they're boys, but she adopted twins. And here she goes on about Randy. So perverse is this. And then I thought about the notion of working women have no clue. Doesn't the husband come? Let's think about the way a situation would work with a stay-at-home mom. First of all, if you're like anybody I experienced, most women control the finances of the house. The guy brings home the bacon and gives it to mother. Mother pays the bills out of it. Of course, husband and wife get together, and there's variations of that, but that's not uncommon. The point is, that mother has a budget. That stay-at-home mom has a budget. I know not necessarily Ann Romney, because she's able to stay at home because she's affluent and in the upper middle class. Yes, she can do that. So what? That's America. That's what we strive to do. Thank you. That's the ideal situation. But either, but still, same thing exists. You don't think she has a budget? Her budget just might be a little higher than other people's budget, but she still has to make ends meet. And if she can't, she has to go to her husband and say, I haven't done a good job managing the household finances. There's not enough food in the house to sustain us, and the car payment's not made, and the house payment isn't made, and I project that we're going to have some problems, et cetera, et cetera. So how can, so on its face right there, you can beat that up, that a housewife wouldn't know. But let me make the analogy to you, nonprofit groups. Now, you've got to remember, nonprofit groups are just like bureaucracies, and bureaucracies are just like nonprofit groups. So I'm talking about people that are in the professional environment. I say business, but it's not business. People who are in the professional environment, whether they're bureaucracies, nonprofit groups supposedly providing service to that which the private sector doesn't handle, and that's why nonprofit groups exist. And if you want to buy that lie, then you can take that one to the bank. But think about nonprofit groups. Do they provide, like a business, like a private business, like an entrepreneur, do they exist because they make a profit by providing a service or a product that people need to exist, and who, through the free marketplace, are willing to put their dollars down, and thus this business is perpetuating? Is that the way a nonprofit works, or is it more like that of a housewife, to where Big Daddy comes in with a load of cash and says, this is your budget for a week, for a month, for a year? And that nonprofit goes about their business just like Ma does at home, taking care of their kids, setting up their schedule, doing the whole nine yards. So if we're going to be little housewives who don't know anything about the economy, then it's no different with an understanding of that, of these people working in nonprofit groups. Is that fair? Is that in line with the universe? I think it is. I think it is all day long.
Golly. What do we got here? I don't know. Tell me what we got. I'll just dance around Facebook. Now, if I really had my act together, okay? Oh, don't talk to him about Saul Alinsky, all right? I talk about him enough already, so if you want to hear about him, I will. All right. How Saul Alinsky taught Obama to say one thing and do the opposite. Gee, you know what? I grew up with my mother telling me, you tell me exactly what I want to hear, and then you go about doing exactly what you're going to do. You tell me, exactly right, Ma. That's exactly what I wanted to do. Supreme Court struck down D.C.'s gun ban via the Heller decision. Yeah. I don't want to look at that. What do you got here? GOP women. What's this GOP? Oh, check this out. GOP women tie Hillary Rosen to the White House after attack on Ann Romney. A number of conservative women, including Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, Republican from Washington, took the Obama administration to task for comments made by the Democratic strategist Hillary Rosen attacking Ann Romney. She has been paid. Her firm has been paid by the Democratic National Committee. She's been down to the White House 35 different times advising the Obama administration on messaging. There is clearly a connection between Hillary Rosen and the Obama administration, and she has been involved in it for many, many years. You know, I was listening to Limbaugh on my way to my job interview this morning, and he was talking about this fact that she had been invited to the White House 35 times. And do you know how many times Joe Biden has been to the White House?
the vice president 6 times. He went on to number of some other people I can't remember off the top of my head, but they were nowhere close to 35 times. You know, what Obama is demonstrating here is day in and day out just pure arrogance. And that's why I say that he will not relinquish power when he loses. And he will lose. It'll be a joke. And it may be very bloody. We may, we're going to see what America's made out of. Not what black America is made out of, but what America is made out of. We're going to see what America stands for and what it stands up for. I just can't imagine laying down, can you? When the knock comes at your door, what are you going to do? Alan showed me exactly what he's going to do. Alan put it on my Facebook page, this big Humvee. This big, 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 big Humvee. Thank you for that, Alan, by the way. That's a nice-looking Humvee. It resembles those buses that he bought for his little campaign there that has been, well, forget that. No, they don't resemble buses. They're just very modern-looking, very black, very ominous-looking Humvees. And what, Alan, 2,700 of them? How many are they? See, here's the deal with the numbers. KJ says there's just too many of us that are intimidated sheep, and I tend to believe, I tend to see it that same way on the surface, okay? If you were to say to me, the vast majority is our sheeple. The vast majority is sheeple. I would say yes. But I would also say to you that if you look at the military, the size of the military that go overseas and fight and die for us, right? If you put all of the military, even when it was at its highest service duty in terms of numbers, the numbers pale next to the total population. So even though you can say to yourself, there's too many sheeple in this country of ours, what I might say to you is, yes, there's way too many people that are sheeple, but it doesn't take much for an army from a percentage standpoint. What are we talking about? 2%? 5%? 10%? 20% to stand up in arms? Isn't that the number? So yes, there's 5-1 sheeple. There's 6-1 sheeple. 7-1, 8-1, 9-1. I wonder what, you know what? I need a math guy right now. I need a math guy to take, what do we got, 300 million people in this country, 400 million? I need, what is it, 21 or 54? How many people are in the military right now? How many infantry do we have? About a million? A half a million? I don't think we got more than that. Combined, of all the service, National Guard, I think we got like a million troops, right? So are you saying to me that we don't have 1/300th of the population that when time comes, no, not a full moon. No, it's not time to go to the beach. No, it's not. No, 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 no. It's time, baby. It may be the day of reckoning, the day of determining if you're a man. Are you a man? Will you take the bullet? Will you, when called from your farms, leave your children and wife thinking that you might never see them again? Will you do that? KJ says it's disgusting seeing how white a lot of whites want to be black. They've taken 5 years to do that, 5 generations rather. I'm sorry, 50 years to do that. Pop culture and the like. Making men more like girls, girls like men. But no, there's always a number of people in all races, all colors, all whatever you want to call them. You know, because to me, I always thought that I'd rather go down kicking than not kick at all. If I ever get caught up in a trick bag where I'm, you know, put up against the wall and shot, or I'm taken into prison where I can't do anything first to at least make an impact, any kind of impact, even if it's my own self-awareness of, hey, man, I stood up, you know? I'm not going to make it easy for you. I'm not going to go along with it. I mean, I'd rather be wrong moving forward, wouldn't you, than right standing still? Oh, I see. They didn't kill you today. They're using you to help everybody else get killed today. No, you didn't get killed today. But you're helping them kill others today so that you can live. Because that's what your passivity does. The opposite of love isn't hate. It's indifference. There's nothing worse than being neutral. There's nothing worse than tying. There's nothing worse than being average. Now, liberals tend to see this as a utopia. Not the liberals being enabled. No, they're kept busy. The liberals that are enabled are kept busy. I'm talking about the ones in the low class. The ones that have little breeding, no family, no moral imperative. They've been taking handouts, scheming the system every step of the way with one hand in felonious crime all day long. See, KJ, I have a real problem, though, speaking about the absolute, you know, white cis and black cis. And, I mean, I really do want to just go off. But think about the few blacks you might know personally, or the many that did you well, that were kind by you. I've had experience with all kinds of people, and I find it very difficult to desecrate their memory, whether they're living or dead, desecrate their energy within my psyche by allowing a generality to encompass someone that's in my memory. I have a hard time with it. So it's, and that's what the left has us. They have us tied behind the back with our inability to make conversation to the degree that it is. Because KJ in this chat room here is all but right, you know? Show me all the great deeds of the past 2 centuries by black people of color. Show me every city on the East Coast that has been managed by black folks, and all you can see is decay. Until we're able to have this open discussion and not being pointed about it either. Of course, it's really hard when you're on the other side of the fence being part of the group that's being what they see as demeaned, and all we're looking to do is tell the truth and get some honest intellectual debate going on. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just think of debate as by default being honest and intellectual? I think we need to go back to debating class so we could learn the rules and ethics of debates. I've never gone to a debate class. I wouldn't know what that's like. I didn't go to the college class when I was in school in the 50s and the 60s. And I was tracked. Yeah. Just get them through, make sure you can read and write and all like that. Boy, what I learned was I actually got a pretty damn good education next to what's going on now. I can't believe that adults who are virtuous would want kids to become stupider. So the obvious question is, maybe they're not virtuous. Maybe by definition they're evil because they're willing to be part of an education system that sees less importance with things like mathematics. Oh, what's this I saw the other day? Some journalism school are no longer going to be testing for spelling. Are you kidding me? Is that like kids in school now that don't need their math tables because they can use a calculator? Of course, that's been going on for two decades now, right, since calculators come out. As soon as technology, I'm telling you, technology is an instrument of liberalism. Absolutely is. Think of all the jobs that, because of technology, oh, but our lives are much better. The University of North Carolina's journalism school is changing a key test for students on spelling and grammar, dropping the spelling part and putting more emphasis on word usage. Yes, let's put emphasis on word usage. We just needed students to brush up on word usage, said Rhonda Gibson, an associate professor at the School of Journalism. So we thought it would be more useful to focus on that in our grammar test than strictly on how we spell a word. Oh, no, we didn't mean to signal we're lessening our desire for students to be good spellers. Still, the move has created a stir in the journalism community, where Jim Romanesco posted a note about it on his popular media grower and drew intense comment. This is just plain nuts, posted one reader. The horror, posted another. This semester, students still need to make at least 70 on the test to graduate. The current test has 50 questions on spelling and 50 on grammar and punctuation. Now, wait a minute. Cut a 70 to pass? I thought this was called college. I thought you let people get away with 70s in high school. I thought this thing is called college. Starting in the fall, the test will be one-third word usage and two-thirds grammar and punctuation. For example, students will need to know the difference between effect and effect rather than just spell the word correctly. Well, let me tell you something right now. I don't want to tell you if I knew effect and effect when I was in high school, but I believe I did, because isn't this one of the basic ones? And I can tell you I certainly know how to spell it. And I know the difference between the two. Oh, man, is that weak. Is that the best example they wanted to come up with? We just don't want students memorizing how to spell a word. Oh, no, we certainly don't want that. No, let's not have them memorizing on how to spell a word, not in the least. The test remains a way for the university to measure students on the fundamentals of grammar, an area where students have slipped in recent decades. Well, I just bet. I don't know that I could isolate grammar versus spelling, she said, but I have seen over the 20 years I've been teaching students coming in with less instruction in grade school and high school in this area, the emphasis seems to be less. It's exactly right. They're not learning it, see, and this is the idea. This is trickle-down, up-down, right? This is almost like trickle-up stupidity. What they don't teach in high school now, they have to teach in college. So what used to be a college education really is a high school education. About how things digress, huh? Some of those spelling skills may be atrophying, she said. This may be attributed to the rise of social media. We're not suggesting students shouldn't use social media. That would be ridiculous. But there are times in their professional and personal lives they will need to be able to use full sentences and complete thoughts. And so we're trying to address that need. We've always addressed that need. Wait a minute. I thought this was a school of journalism. Or is it just a journalism class? No, it's a journalism school. Then aren't they there to become journalists? What's this business about their social life? I thought they were being journalists. I haven't seen one example of their need as it might exist within a broadcast arena, a print environment. How this relates to journalism. They're talking about these kids like they're in high school. These sounds like they're high school kids. Boy, man. I'll be right back. Back, folks, to the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour from Tucson, Arizona, where each and every day it's the culture, stupid. I've been reading for my Facebook fans today and friends, and, oh, boy. Doing some shout-outs and things like that. Hey, KJ, nice to see you. Welcome back, baby. I went on a job interview this morning. Golly, can you imagine me selling shoes? Selling shoes, I gotta get a job though. You know, we're in a performance driven environment. You know?
Thomas Salisbury. What do you think of Reverend Sharpton, Reverend Jackson? Why haven't Hispanics stepped up in defense of the white Hispanic? Thomas Salisbury says maybe they have and the media just isn't reporting it. Alicia Campbell says maybe they have, dang it, Thomas, maybe they have. And she says, and Tony Venuti is a census worker twice. I can tell you that, and it may shock you, but Caucasian, all white people, are a much broader group of people than you think. You, of course, have those European and Russian descent, the Middle Easterners, Arabs, Jews, and all those from the country of India who were all considered as Caucasian. And then, of course, you have the Hispanics who can choose based on their heritage and ethnic background to list themselves as Hispanic white or Hispanic other. So when you say white, people, you are covering a large group of people. Alicia further goes on to say, the classification of race, as defined scientifically and historically, is divided into approximately five groups. Caucasian, Asian, African Black, Native, South and North, American, Eskimo, Inuits, and of course, Polynesian, Pacific Islanders, or Aborigines. And there you have it. Well, of course, the people who can do a mixture of the above. Well, I chimed in. I said, I want to see the process, the international community that went into those determinations. And I remember reading something a long time ago how that happened. You know, there was some kind of international intervention, international committee, probably within the UN for all I know, that made those determinations. But as far as I'm concerned, don't belittle me by calling me a color. Don't belittle me by calling me white, black, red, pink. You want to take away somebody's self-identity? Let's just start really first by making everything average. Everything just blend in and get diluted, polluted. Where do you see white on a map, on the globe? Where do you see black on the white, on the map, on a globe? You don't. It's asinine, man. I mean, it really is asinine.
I've just had it. I'm serious. I've had it up to here, you know. Haven't you? Haven't you had it? Well, now I've got it. I've got a rant and roll. I know what I know. Unlike most of you that think you know, you think. Unlike most of you and you and you and yes, maybe even you, indeed, not only me, but gosh, 2 and 3 aren't great numbers. Now, are they? You see, I've been watching this, and I've just had it. I've had it up to here. Haven't come down there from there, in hell. The hell we fear not, indeed fear not. Italian, never white. Always American, but not recognized. No, why Italian? The wine with the waters parted, diluted to a hyphen. Assimilate, dilate, dilute, pollute with a bandanza. Pollute that which is the water to the wine. Yes, water's parted, now we're white. I'm telling you, I've had it. I've had it up to here. Check it out. Not all things are black and white. Italian, I am. Wrong, oh, right. Rules to break, satisfy the needs. Rules to break, pay the price, fall on the sword, accept the heat. Rules to break, the fun we make. Do as I say, not as I do. Were the rules we had to follow, but you got caught. Was the burden for which price paid. You compete with life, do all you want. Do all you want. The risk, but oh, it's fun. Pay the price, shut your mouth. Oh, woe is me. Dad, bail me out. I don't belong. Take him out, officer. That's my son. The Joneses, while being swept up, wood must keep up. Never mind. Air is thin. Awareness is thinner. Feeling faint so high. Looking down on others. Lucky are we. The anointed ones. Yes, the anointed. We know better. Ooh, better than those. And yes, even those who think
We know. You see, folks, not all things are black and white. My name is Tony Venuti, and you... Oh, gosh, golly gee. Welcome back, folks, to the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour. Tony Venuti here, where each and every day I'm talking about virtue and evil and how evil exists but for one reason. To have a field day on good. To have a field day on good. Do you know what a measure of goodness is that I think is universal in the world? And by being able to understand a measure of goodness, we can maybe identify evil. Do you think a measure of goodness, as I see it, is that which you appreciate and cherish the life of children? We talk about the American dream like it's something you buy at a five and dime that all of a sudden we've been given the right to own. But I've always seen life as through the eyes of hope and dreams of a child and what they can become, what a child can become. The goodness, being able to take something so precious and turn it into the greatest human being known to mankind. But what do you think about people who use children? What do you think about people who take away the hopes and dreams of children? What do you think about people that turn certain children into victims and make them feel less than valued, less than worthy of self-esteem, less than worthiness of what they can bring to their own selves? What do you make of that? I think that's pretty bad. When you think about the education of a child, that stands right in front of you when you talk about the grace of children and their hopes for their future. I've talked about my understanding to the incrementalization of a deliberate attempt, I believe, that I've been witness to for 50 years unwittingly, knowing full well that there's people up there pulling strings against the best interests of mankind. I told you about sitting next to Albert DeSalvo in Walpole State Prison after my first tour of duty inside of a prison where the first week inside what they showed us for a film, what they showed us for entertainment, was The Longest Yard. Not only did it celebrate negative behavior and criminal behavior, but it essentially celebrated the idea about being antagonistic with prison guards. So I looked at this and I slid down in my chair. I remember it. Here I was, 21 years old, and I said to myself, I get it. This is all just but one little game. But one little game. What we have here is the educations from years gone by. Talk about this is Charlotte Ezerby, deliberately dumbing down of our culture, and this is her firsthand account of it.
My name is Charlotte Thompson Ezerby, and I served as senior policy advisor in the United States Department of Education under the Reagan administration, during which I had access to all of the most important documents for the restructuring of not only American education, but global education. And I'm also the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which gets into all of this, gives the background of what I saw not only in the Department of Education, but as a local school board member. I was trained to identify the resistors to the sex ed, drug ed, alcohol ed, suicide ed, death ed, those good, smart Americans who realize that anything that has education hanging off the end of it is probably not what they're looking for. I was trained to identify those good people and to go up against them and actually to go and try to get them to join us through the group process system, make them feel important, get them on a committee. And when that just blew my mind. I have to say, people often ask me, what is it that got you involved in education? Well, finding out what I saw at the local level certainly upset me. When I went and I saw that Americans were being trained to identify resistors, then I got pretty upset. And luckily, there was a big book that came with the in-service training called Innovations in Education, A Change Agent's Guide. And I was able to take that back home with me. Unbelievable examples of how to con the Christians and different people who are upset with what you're trying to do, how to bring them over to your side. Case studies, true case studies of educators who had put programs in that normally, you know, in a normal American town, nobody would want them. How did they manage to get them in? How did they con the people? And the other thing was, not only was I trained to identify the resistors, I was trained to go to the important people, high-profile, highly thought-of people in the community, with the Rotary, Chamber of Commerce, Garden Club, you name it, the different groups in our towns. Go to them and convince them of the importance of these new programs, like sex ed, drug ed, I just mentioned all of them, and to get them on your side, because when you can get the leadership in a community to go along with it, then the newspaper comes in and says, you know, a committee's been set up with the head of the Rotary and this and that, and they're all getting behind this task force to discuss whether we're going to have a new sex education program. And then when Mary Jones, you know, who ordinarily would think, why would we want to have a sex education program when we don't have any problems with kids having sex or anything, so she might be concerned. She might be one of the resistors. She reads that her best friend, who's the head of the garden club, is on this committee, and she thinks, oh, well, hey, Mary Appleton is on that committee. She's heading it up. Must be okay. So I was taught really how to con the community. They always call everybody by the first name. You have to get very, you know, affectionate with people, and you say, William, you know, I'm so glad you've come to this meeting, and I understand your concerns about this program, because I've had other people, usually it's the really bright people in the community who have these concerns, and would you like to join our group? The original program was funded by what would subsequently become my office. It was funded by the Office of Research in the U.S. Office of Education, because it was funded early on, about the late 60s, still funded, by the way. And the money went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to a professor by the name of Ronald Havelock. And he was the one that put together the whole training, the whole seminar, the book. And in the back of the book you had, they admitted it, right in the back of the book, they had about 100 major change agents listed from all over the country. Some of them I recognize, some I still don't, but some I do. And so this was a very important project. And it was being, it was being carried out in I'm sure, all over the country, not just where I was. This was in Searsport, Maine, this lovely little town on the coast of Maine, in the school there where the guy came in, the facilitator, not Professor Havelock, but a facilitator, to train us. And these were good people that were there. You know, they were some of the teachers from my school, where I was on the local school board, principals, et cetera, normal-looking Americans. You really ask yourself, they must themselves have reacted very much the way I did. That's why I've always had a lot of understanding for teachers that have to go through this stuff. I didn't have to continue going through it. They've had to, through the years, constant training, retraining, sensitivity training, break their values. Right, no wrong. You've got to have all religions represented, so, you know, tolerant of everything, and because that's the New World Order. Disorder. Professor Benjamin Bloom is probably the most important behavioral psychologist ever to live. I mean, maybe not quite as much as Pavlov and Skinner, but he really implemented the system in education in the United States. And he was the author of The Taxonomy of Educational Objectives. And I know that doesn't mean much to us. It means a lot to teachers. They know. All teachers have to go through that, Bloom's taxonomy. And just to give you an idea of how blatant they are, Benjamin Bloom said the purpose of education, and I often say this to parents, really, listen to this. You think the purpose of education is reading, writing, and arithmetic? The purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And then he goes on and he says, he defines good teaching, and this is even worse from the parental standpoint, as challenging the students' fixed beliefs. And then, in some of his works that I have, that are in my book, a lot of this stuff is in
it. Who needs this challenge? Does he need challenge or does he need change? Change
their... Yeah, through challenging. It's through challenging. You go up against them, and you change them. And you ask a good question, because then he goes on in one part of the taxonomy that is in my book, he says that he can take a student from here to there, from a belief in God or his country or whatever, to being an atheist and not believing in his country in 1 hour. Oh, yeah, he does it. And I've seen it with students. I've seen it with young people. And they don't even know, and teachers don't even know. That's why if you talk to teachers about it often, they'll really have an awfully hard time dealing with it. And if you go up to a superintendent, an educational administrator, superintendent or whatever, and you ask him or her, have you ever been through sensitivity training? They'll usually crack up because they went through it. They are the worst, those programs. I've been through them. I mean, how can anything be worse than some of the ones that the regular classroom has? But they're the worst. To bring about change, they put them through role-playing, psychodrama, all these psychological techniques where they play the part of starving children and the other one plays the part of a very wealthy industrialist child. And, you know, they bring about the attitude and value change through the emotions. You know how young people are. You know, they're naturally very altruistic and they want to help and they don't like to see poverty around the world. And so what they'll do is just like I think I mentioned to you earlier, all right, I don't know whether I did, going into the teacher, putting in the new social studies program in our community and walking through, having taken little tots through town and identifying big, rich people's houses and small, poor people's houses. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Getting them young and making them feel sorry for the people who live in the trailer across from the captain's house. Because they only eat hot dogs, not steak. And then they'll do the same thing with Ethiopia or wherever, some third world country, showing them the children dying. And then they'll show pictures of our affluence. And what do you eat for breakfast? Oh, you have eggs and bacon and cereal and orange juice and grapefruit and everything. Yum, yum, yum. Do you really think it's fair? Common unity. That's what we call it, common unity. There's no rule for the individual in the community. And for everything that goes on in the Soviet Union, or communism, is based on this community, the commune.
Collectivism and more. Boy, you want to talk about sinister stuff, huh? This is the kind of sinister stuff that is going on in our schools today, and you got it right here firsthand. It is like... scary. That was Charlotte Iserbit deliberately dumbing down.
She was in the White House, I guess, 10 or 15 years ago as the education director. I mean, wow. Behavior modification. If you don't know intuitively that someone's not looking out for the best interests when you see them being the governance, the people governing, the people we trust to make the kinds of decisions. It's sort of like adopting a parent. Isn't when we vote somebody into office sort of like adopting a parent? Isn't it like the pirates adopting a warrior chief, huh? Somebody to lead them? You trust them to do in the best interests of the bigger picture that includes you, not to be used, not to have your existence taken from you. God, this is sinister, man. This is Tony Venuti, folks. You're listening to the Ex-Conservative Radio Hour from Tucson, Arizona. I'm coming right back in just a few minutes.